It's the Tuesday, which means that the weekend is a better memory. But what it really means is that it's time for your favorite podcast, your favorite sporting podcast, your favorite hockey podcast. It is Hockey the Podcast. The name says it all. Episode number 54. It's phenomenal to think that we've come all this way. And I know we keep on patting ourselves on the back, but yeah, we're pretty proud of our efforts. And once again, we have another stellar guest lined up, courtesy of Tyron Jabu Barnard, who is the talent scout. But this man, he didn't really need to go far to get this talent, because it's another return, Ty. Another double showing, we're happy to say. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, Derek. It's obviously great to be on the podcast again. We've been spending a lot of time on some quizzes, and they've been great, but it's always great to get back and chatting about hockey. And of course, you mentioned that we have a returnee. It's our third returnee after Cindy and Springs. And for this one, we had to go all the way back, not to episode 5, not to episode 7, but all the way back to episode 1, where we interviewed the supermodel known as Lloyd Norris Jones, good old Chuck. And of course, lots has changed in Chuck's life since we chatted in episode 1, so I'm sure he'll share some of that for us all today. And of course, some great things he's been writing on social media about changing the game of hockey for the better. And what a great time a lot of us have done that, reflecting in the lockdown, the various lockdowns. Of course, Chuck is talking to us from Germany, so their lockdown is a lot less German than our lockdown was. But yeah, it's going to be a good chat. So Chuck, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks, Tyron. Thanks, Derek, for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. I mean, first and foremost, before we dive into the hockey and chatting all things hockey, obviously your world has changed slightly since we last chatted to you. would you like to share that with everybody, Chuck?
Yeah, not so slightly. yeah, since we last spoke, my wife and I, we fell pregnant with our first. She is currently 34 weeks down the road. So, yeah, we are quite fortunate that we are here based in Germany, because, yeah, the support system for women with children, or, yeah, for married couples is incredibly good. And she goes on maternity leave 6 weeks before due date. And, yeah, we have the opportunity to have up to 12 months of maternity leave, which is phenomenal, because it just gives so much time and so much opportunity for us to bond with the baby.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is it's a really, really cool thing that they have there in Europe. I mean, I know if you go over to Sweden or Norway, I think it's Sweden, that it's 12 months, but the father has to take two. The mother has to take two, and then the other 8, you can choose which one takes.
So that's pretty much identical here as well.
Oh, brilliant.
I get 2, and Debbie gets 12, and if we wanted to, we can combine that and take 14 and then split it, so I can get 7, and Debbie can get 7, and we can share the responsibilities over those first seven months of the baby's life.
And, of course, I mean, when you're on daddy duty, obviously it's going to be on the side of a
at least for the first few months, it will be indoor hockey around here, so I won't be as involved on the hockey pitch, which is really cool. Baby is due on the 26th of October, and our last game of the first half of the season is the 24th of October. So I will then have November, December, January, February, and March, at least, with 70-80% of my time with the baby. And then I've got some coaching duties with the indoor side. So, yeah, that's really exciting.
Nothing wrong with that. So, yeah. I mean, obviously, dialing in, you are we are going to talk just about your own hockey first before we talk on the bigger picture. But yeah, I mean, you're back in Germany playing with Hamburg, and How has the season started with no fans and I mean, obviously that weird experience?
It's a little bit different here. We've got, we are allowed up to 200 fans. They have to pre-register before they come to the pitch. But because of the protocols that they're putting in place, they're obviously ensuring that everyone is socially distancing themselves from each other. And yeah, we played our first weekend last weekend. I unfortunately didn't play. I sustained a knee injury a few weeks ago. That has kept me out for probably 4 weeks in total. So I start my first full training tonight and see how it goes. If it doesn't go, if I can't train at 100%, then I will miss out this weekend as well. And then quite fortuitously, next weekend is Pro League weekend, and then we have a single game on the following weekend. So that means that if I miss this weekend, which is not a complete train smash, I can then fully recover over the next 2 weeks for a single header weekend that we've got out in Nuremberg. So,
Brian, and how did the team do this past weekend?
We beat one team from Mannheim called TSV Mannheim 2-1, and then we drew against Mannheim Hockey Club, which is one of the top clubs in European hockey at the moment. We drew with them 2-2. We were leading twice in the game, and it was a pretty great game to watch. And yeah, if you actually really want to watch any of our games, you can watch it on YouTube. You just follow UHC Live and you can see all of our home games and a lot of other games live streamed to YouTube.
And I mean, Jack, obviously globally, the Hoofdklasse in Holland is always spoken about as the premier club hockey league. How do you think the Bundesliga stacks up against it?
The top teams in the Bundesliga certainly stack up against the top teams in Holland. They are on sort of an even keel. I believe that the Bundesliga is very competitive all the way through. You've got pretty much 10 teams that can compete with each other on any weekend. The other two teams that usually come up from the second division generally struggle initially. But if they manage to stay in the Bundesliga for at least a season or two, they then start attracting other players and, become a mainstay and become very competitive. The Hoofdklasse, I mean, pretty much every team in the Hoofdklasse is really good, but your top sort of five or six teams are way better than the teams that are in the bottom six. And you can see that in the results on the weekends. So, I believe that, I'd say our top three or four clubs in the Bundesliga would compete with the top three or four clubs in the Hoofdklasse.
Lloyd, how are you doing officially? I know we chatted a bit before we went on air, and, I'll never forget that famous quote from Sense of a Woman, a movie that I really, really enjoy. It was Al Pacino with Lieutenant Colonel Frank Slade, I think it was, he was playing, and he was telling the young guy that was working for him to call the hotel and make sure that it's filled with wall-to-wall with John Daniels. And the little guy said, "Don't you mean Jack Daniels?" And he said, "Well, he may be Jack to you, but when you've known him as long as I have, that's a joke." So, and I feel the same way, because I know the Ty's been calling you Chuck, but we know each other, but not that well, so I'll continue calling you Lloyd. For now, but that's pretty amazing when you speak about how things are done a bit differently with the 200 pre-registered fans, because as you know, we're sitting in South Africa where you can't get a solitary fan through any doors for any sporting events at the moment. And how does that work? I mean, that's an incredible process, and interesting where Tyron said up front, he said that Germany's doing things a lot more un-German than South Africa are doing with regards to the lockdown, and that has to be said, but I mean, if you ever talk about efficiency, it doesn't get much more efficient than Germany. Has it gone down really, really well? No hiccups in terms of the fans with the 200 pre-registered? And the fact that you're getting 200 fans is pretty cool as well.
Yeah, it's obviously very important for the clubs to have these fans coming in because they generate money at the gates and they also generate money at the bar. It's a little bit different for footballers because they generate so much money through broadcasting rights and through sponsorship deals. So they don't necessarily need to have fans in the stadiums. But obviously for a smaller club like UHC and all the hockey clubs, it's incredibly important to have at least 200 fans come in. We usually get in the region of about, I'd say, 500 to 1,000, depending on if it's a derby weekend. But the process is quite simple. They've put up a ticketing system on our hockey shop that we've got at the club. And you pre-register, it costs nothing to pre-register. Once you check out, it still says zero. So you have to pay cash at the door. Because Germans love their cash. They don't use plastic or they don't pay online. They don't seem to like that. But yeah, I think that's the most important is that, yes, they're efficient and they love their efficiency. But yeah, I think the most important was to make sure that the clubs can survive.
Yeah. And I mean, with you during lockdown, I can imagine from a sports person's perspective, it must have been incredibly scary. And you spoke about the broadcast rights, et cetera, when it comes to football. And, you know, I actually watched a statement yesterday from the chairman of the European Footballing Governing Body, I think it was. And he said that football clubs must start preparing themselves for the worst in terms of cash because the rebates are going towards the broadcasters, not the clubs. Because a lot of the for instance, you look at the Champions League, for instance, of course it was reduced to single leg games and that was literally half of the matches weren't broadcast. So they're plying all that money back or what they can into the broadcasters and the football clubs are taking a hit. I think it was in the region of something like 350 billion totaled across Europe, obviously. So they're in for a massive scare. And hockey, of course, you can't even talk nearly those numbers. I'm not even close. But as a professional sports person, I mean, were you nipping at one stage when COVID really hit and you realized, wow, my livelihood could be in serious danger here?
Yes, at one stage, but in saying that as well, the system here was phenomenal, not just for myself, but for anyone that was employed in Germany. They have this thing called Kurzarbeit, which is like short work, and it means that the state paid for a part of my salary and a part of a lot of other people's salaries, and then the hockey club would then top up the remaining amount. And because I'm on a contract yet, they couldn't just let me go. And if they did let me go, then at least the state would help me with a percentage of my employment contract. So, yeah, we were really taken care of here. And it's obviously great that the government they have enough funds to be able to do that for their citizens. And yeah, I think that, you know, as soon as lockdown actually hit, we knew that it was just going to be a waiting period, and we put a lot of protocols and things in place within the team and within the league to make sure that at least we could start playing by September this year. So they were very thorough, and they made sure that they were in communications with the clubs all the time to at least work out a solution, and it wasn't just, you know, let's just wait and see what happens.
Yeah, Chuck, and obviously it's great to be, I mean, considering the struggles that you have endured over your career, and the difficulties that it has been in terms of financial and a large cost out of your pocket. It just must be a nice situation to be in where you are being looked after a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you're a professional sportsman like a footballer, then you know you've got job security for a while, for at least the remaining part of your contract if it's 3 or 4 years or so. For a hockey player, it's, you're always sort of working on year by year. And yeah, obviously, if you're employed by a club here in Germany, you're taken care of. And if you're not taken care of by the club, then you're taken care of by the state. So yeah, it was reassuring. And as a hockey player, yeah, having the struggles that I've had in the past with funding and so on, and having to pay your own way in a lot of tours and so on, especially with IPTs and something, and a couple of times with the national team. Yeah, it's obviously a great position to be in, and yeah, I'm very fortunate that I'm here and that I can speak from this position.
Well, and Chuck, you're also speaking. You know, the reason we chatted again was we've chatted a few times, but you were sharing some great thought-provoking debates on social media, and I want to dive into the first one, and I want to chat about that. And you called it hockey needs a reboot. Yes. We have a sport that is largely tournament-based, which really doesn't and obviously I'm talking specifically here from a national point of view. It's a very tournament-based sport that doesn't really give your sponsors any sort of long-term exposure. We've tried to build the test status by going into the Pro League to try and get to the point where we are having a test match thing, but it became more and more exclusive rather than an inclusive thing, like a model like the rugby world, or even potentially the football world. And there's a lot of different angles to this. So, I mean, let's start on your side, and then I'll share my thoughts. And, you know, we encourage all listeners to get in touch and share their thoughts as well.
Yeah. And so, I've put out two sort of ideas, and obviously just wanting to spark some sort of reaction from the hockey community so we can start talking about it, start brainstorming ideas. And the first one was, more based around world hockey and how we can improve world hockey, taking some lessons from football. And one of the things that football has is a really strong European football league, where not necessarily UEFA Champions League, but more just the local leagues, and how that has created the professionalism in world football over the decades. Football has a very easy to follow sort of sport. Hockey's a little bit different because of all the different rules, and it's a little trickier to try and bring in new spectators or new fans. But yeah, the ideas that I was looking at more was towards a unified calendar. So you have your European leagues that play at a certain time, and they like football. They create international weekends where now we can actually start watching international hockey on a more regular basis instead of at certain times. I think that, and when I say at certain times, I mean at certain periods. So it's like that's what I'm talking about when I say it's event based. The Pro League has come in, and it's been quite difficult to find a slot in the calendar that doesn't impede too much on the European leagues. And that's obviously where we need to try find some balance, where the collaboration between the FIH and the European Hockey Federation needs to find a solution where you go, okay, most important thing right now, like football, are the European leagues. Let's make sure we can get players to come from all over the world to play in these leagues, okay, and to try and grow the vehicle that is European hockey. And then from there, create certain periods throughout the season to allow hockey to get onto TV on the weekends or during the week, whenever it might be. But at least then you know that hockey is going to be getting onto TV for 7, 8, 9 months on a consistent basis throughout the year. So the Pro League has been fighting, and the FIH has been fighting to try and get hockey onto TV. but the European leagues and the FIH haven't really seen eye to eye up until this point. And I think that if we want to move anything forward, if we want to move hockey in South Africa forward, if we want to move hockey in Europe forward, we need collaboration. That's the most important thing.
I think collaboration is the key word, and it definitely affects, it transcends just hockey. We've seen it in South African sport, the massive amount of infighting between a lot of unions. And I think a lot of people just say, well, I mean, when are you eventually just going to communicate amongst each other and collaborate for the greater good of the particular sport? And that's certainly the case with hockey. And I was very, very impressed with a lot of your tweets. And when Ty mentioned that you wanted to come on board, I thought, well, does it have to do with what you've been saying? And it wasn't just the fact that hockey people started discussing hockey with you, but it was people from other sports too. I mean, you did create quite a buzz with a lot of your ideas and a lot of your comments, and that was great to see. What would your ideal be in the future? Because we know that club hockey in the world is pretty much the lifeline of hockey. But would you like to see club hockey or international hockey be the marquee of the sport?
I think that it would have to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I think that club hockey in Europe needs to be, that's what creates the fan base. And I know that living here in Germany, or if you're in Holland, or if you're in Belgium, you've got players at a younger level that, they bleed for their club. And it's the same for football as well. And while everyone likes to support their national teams, it's their club sides that they love the most. Mm. So I feel that there needs to be a balance. We need to get hockey onto TV regularly, and whether it's club hockey or whether it's international hockey, it doesn't really matter. It just needs to be both, at least. It's not one before the other, really.
And that can be allowed with one of your recommendations, having that international window. Being able to focus on club, and then when you know that this two-week period, this is where I start representing Germany or South Africa or like for like for like.
Yeah, my idea was more sort of dovetailing the international calendar. So your European leagues, let's say, participate between April and September, because during the cold months and they can play their indoor hockey, because a lot of the northern and eastern European countries play indoor hockey because of the cold months. So moving the calendar between sort of March, April and September, October. And then now you've got in the region of sort of 8-9 months to be able to play a European league, and then sort of dovetail your international calendar so that every weekend you've got a new country that has an international weekend, and then you've got teams coming from sort of all over the world, the likes of New Zealand, Australia, Argentina, the US, even South Africa coming into Europe for two weekends and playing certain games. I know that it does require quite a bit of funding, but we've got a lot of countries in hockey that are funded by government and their sporting programs. So the idea was more based on, let's get international hockey onto broadcasts around the world. And then, just trying to make sure that sort of, I know that during May and August is a nice window for broadcasters like SuperSport to get hockey onto TV because there's no football. And that's a huge window that needs to be exploited.
Yeah, I look at it, Chuck, and I think about, for me, it's always been the case of I think there's too many irrelevant tournaments in hockey. I think, we'll have a FIH Open Series 3, 2, 1, and it's all to build to ultimately the best 12 teams playing in a tournament. Instead, I would love to see, if we are going to say, okay, let's talk international hockey here, well, let's have tiers. So you keep your World Cup and your Olympic Games. That's two things. And, you know, the Olympic Games potentially should be actually spoken about as either fives or indoor hockey and moving away from outfield and make your World Cup your big thing. But have a proper World Cup qualifying series, not a AFCON in a week. You know, you follow almost the European model where you go the European Championship or even the AFCON or whatever in football where, okay, this weekend South Africa and Egypt are playing. And, yes, I know there's a cost involved, but you create a commercial desire. You also can create something where people are so excited to watch. I remember when the World League semifinals were here at Wits. It was 2 weeks. It was men and women. And there was five games every day. Maybe four games every day. But because of that, the appetite started to drop quickly because it was almost too much. So people could pick and choose. Like, I want it to be that, like when the Springboks play a test match at Ellis Park, everybody in Joburg wants to get there. If the Springboks play a test match at Cape Town Stadium, everyone wants to get there. Because you don't get to watch them play 20 times a year there. I mean, I remember when our SA Women was sponsored by Investec and played China 18 times in 21 days. I eventually stopped going to games because I was just like, okay, cool, I'll go 3 days' time and watch.
So we
don't do supply and demand well. But I agree with you. I think we need to get to a point, for me, we need to build club. We need the South African guys to have a great club structure here in South Africa. I'm also a fan of doing away with IPT completely. I know that would never happen, but I just think it's a crazy tournament to put people who don't play together every week and pick your national team from that. When you've got guys playing in the highest leagues in Germany, in Holland, in England, and if we had a great league structure, you know, I can just compare it to last year. I went to the Belga Techs Elite Club Challenge in Durban. And I know that doesn't involve the varsities, but I went and watched hockey there. And there was a game between Wanderers and Baloo, I mean, who are just complete opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of how they approach a game and stuff like that. That game itself, I think Wanderers were winners 5-3, was better than any game I saw at RPT, including the final. And I'm saying if a national selector can watch that, you're seeing players play in a proper structured environment. I mean, I know we're blending over to the second point here. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to see something like that. I'd love to see one main tournament. I'd love to see, you know, an African Cup tournament happen, but let's have some qualifiers for it. And then I'd love to see a test series. Imagine Germany come to South Africa and they play South Africa in a test in Cape Town. Then on Tuesday night, they play a Western Province Cricket Club. And Western Province Cricket Club could do it as a fundraiser. Then on Thursday, they play another tour game against Pinelands. And then on Saturday, they play the second test against South Africa. Instead of playing five tests in a week, it would be, I just think, would create more value that way.
Yeah, absolutely. To get back to your first point, I think that when I first started playing club hockey back in the year 2001, between 2001 and 2007, we were still playing Champ of Champs, which is your best clubs from each province that win their leagues. Then a month or two later, after the leagues have finished, then play Champ of Champs, which is the best clubs in the country. And each year, that would produce the best hockey in the country. That fell away after 2007 or 2008. And I remember going in 2003 with Fisher, we played it in Cape Town because we were invited to play it there. Sorry, I lied. That wasn't actually that one. I played it three times with Tux. And we were playing against Durban Tech. We were playing against Parklands. We were playing against West Coast Crew Club. We were playing against UCT. Pinelands. We were playing against all the best clubs in the country, and the hockey that we were playing and producing over that weekend were phenomenal. You played two games a day because you'd only be able to sort of get three tournament days in. But yeah, like you said, the hockey was better because now you're training and playing with guys 7-8 months of the year and you've now won a league, and now you go to champs. Whereas IPT Hockey, you put all the best players together. Their end goal is to try and make it into the national team. So it's very seldom do you actually see like really good hockey where you're playing as a team. You've got a lot of players that are there to make sure that they get seen by national selectors. And we basically just plugged the hole, and it just seems that our position is just getting wider and wider between ourselves and the top teams in the world, purely because we just don't have the right structures in SA hockey at the moment, which is very unfortunate.
So let's talk about those structures, and it leads perfectly into my next question, because this was one of your main features of the discussion that you put out on social media, and that was regarding following a similar system to what's used in Australia. And you speak about where players are playing a lot together, and you ideally want players that are involved in the national hockey side to have one base throughout the year. And you say, for instance, in Australia, if you're going to be playing hockey, you're going to be based in Perth, and you'd like to bring everyone up here to Gauteng. Well, I say here because that's where I am, not where you are. But so that would be your ideal.
Absolutely. Firstly, a disclaimer. I've played in Perth for 3 seasons, and I've played in various leagues across the world. So I'm trying to use my experience to try and better the game in South Africa, and just sort of spark some discussion to be able to move our national teams forward. I know that in Australia they've got a system that is, it's heavily funded by the government, and you've got your national players that are on, that are basically employed by Hockey Australia and getting paid to play and to train. We obviously can't do that because we don't have the funding for it. So my idea was more a watered down version of that, where we get players to sacrifice, because if you want to go to the Olympic Games, if you want to go to a World Cup and you want to do well, you need to sacrifice something. And if it's sacrificing a coffee at Bike and Bean on the Durban beachfront every morning to be able to at least go to an Olympic Games and compete, and to potentially get ourselves into the top 6 or top 8 as a starter, and then move closer towards a medaling position in the next 2 or 3 Olympic cycles, then, I think those sacrifices are worth it. The Australian system has talent identification programs at each of the states levels. So under 14, under 16, under 18, if you're good enough, once you've made it through under 18 and have been training with sort of states or provincial level players between sort of the ages of 18 and 22, let's say, and then you're good enough to make it in Perth, then you get an invitation to then come over and live and train in Perth full time. For South Africa, it would be a little bit different. I think that in South Africa, we've got a very good and strong school support system and school hockey community, especially in Johannesburg. And the reason why I chose Johannesburg is, firstly, the South African Hockey Association is based in Johannesburg. Secondly, because there are a lot more schools in Johannesburg than there are in Cape Town or in Durban. And that just means that there are more beds in hostels and more positions at schools as well for players to coach. And the main purpose for what I proposed was to ultimately get all players into one region and to be training for 7, 8, 10 months of the year. You don't necessarily have to be training flat out all year round. I think that you can have your training blocks, and it's something that I forwarded to you guys. Some more detailed plans of what SA Hockey can do and what national programs can do as well. And I feel that you can certainly train in the mornings from sort of Monday to Thursday, like the Dutch do in their training blocks leading up to major tournaments. They train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and on Thursday morning, and on a Thursday evening, they are then training with their club sides, which they are employed by as well. So there's a collaboration between the clubs and the national teams that if you have a national player and they go to a place called Papendal, those players then train together as a unit and then come and train on a Thursday. It doesn't happen all year round. Sometimes your national players are with you on your Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday training sessions as well. So I believe that a training block where you, let's say you take it as a month, you have a month training block, and out of that month you go, okay, for 3 weeks we're going to be training together from Monday to Thursday, and then we'll have a week break for players to rest and recoup. And you do that, and then obviously if you get closer to tournament time, you now start training flat out for 2 months or 3 months before. The idea was based, because it needs to be based on a zero funding model, the idea is to work with our strengths, and our strengths are our schools.
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute there. Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it's a very straightforward suggestion. I mean, to partner up with schools. So firstly, imagine you're giving these young guys an opportunity to have a job, to have a house over their heads, and heck, even potentially partner with the universities, and let them go study. So we're providing them education as part of the program. So you're getting education, you're getting work, and you're working in an environment where you stay together with the team. I think that's, it's a model that the USA women followed, a very similar model. Just because of the geographic size of the country, they couldn't leave everybody separate. So they brought everybody to the training center. And look what it did. They turned out to be a pretty decent team. It's now tailed off a bit with Jana leaving, but it shows that model works. The Irish girls did it. They all stayed together for a period of time, and it worked. And there's no reason why a commercial hub like Johannesburg couldn't be the host for something like this.
No, absolutely. I think that if you want to compete at international level and not just sort of compete in a tournament, but actually compete with the teams, you have to have your players training and playing together on a regular basis. And while, if I look back over my career, we've always had really good top quality international individual hockey players, but we've always struggled to come together as a team and compete against these top nations. So we can continue the way we are, and we can keep relying on individual performances to sort of get us to a certain point, but it's not going to get us over the line. There needs to come to a point where we find a solution and that's why I'm proposing the solution, that we can get ourselves from where we are, which is, I don't know, 15th in the world, into the top 10 at least with some solid performances, and then start really competing in the 2 to 4 years time, let's say, if they had to start a program like this today. They would start really competing 2 to 4 years time. And that's exactly what happened with Argentina, is that they were all staying in one place, and it was sort of like a youth hostel, and it didn't look really, it wasn't really clean and whatever, but they were training and playing together, and their top players were playing in Europe. So they were playing and learning from these leagues all over Europe, and then bringing that knowledge back to Argentina. And the same would apply for us. We would have a couple of players, or as many players as we possibly can, that go and play in Europe in the top leagues. And then you've got a base of players, I'd say between 15 to 20 or 20 to 25 players that are living and working in Johannesburg for only a few years. If you really wanted to, you could. You're asking players that are sort of between the ages of 22 to 26 or 21 to 30 or whatever it might be to take 4 years out of their life to compete for an Olympic medal. And I think that if you offered that to someone, I think that they would really look at it and see the benefits far outweigh the cons at the moment.
Well, and we can also add to that the commercial benefits, because you now are talking about a consistent program where these players are being seen. They're going around to schools where they're working. And so all of a sudden, a sponsor who comes on board is not just being seen at a World League or at an Open Series, because these guys would, you'd deck them out in kit. You'd put them in golf shirts with Investec branding on it. They'd be there all the time. They'd be appearing, we could start having them together. We could get more media agencies to see them. Currently you get your national team together at very different times, or they'll come to Randburg where some of the guys are training now, obviously the Joburg-based guys. But you're all wearing different kits and we're not, So I feel like if you brought everyone together, the commercial arm could be better. You could get them similar looking kit, we could get branded stuff, we could, and again, why not then go and play a test series? Now you've got people together, you play with the local guys, play a test series against Namibia. Play a test series against the SA Masters.
It's certainly a start, and it's an opportunity. I mean, if we want to advertise at sort of a local schools level with what you're proposing, then at least it's a start. It's somewhere that you can say, okay, well, we've got all these players into one area. We can now say to someone, okay, this is what we can offer you. We're not offering you the world. We're not offering you sort of hockey on TV all the time, and you're going to be broadcast to millions of people. This is what we can offer you, and this is sort of the plan. This is how we want to go with SA Hockey from where we are, 15th in the world, and sort of just going to tournaments, to now taking the next step and going, okay, we're going to be working hand in hand with you guys as the sponsor. We want you to understand what our plan is. And I think sponsors and corporates love plans. They want to see where their money's going to go in three or four years' time. And they don't just want to go, okay, let's throw a bunch of cash in and, you kind of do whatever you want with it.
I specifically look there. Sorry for the interruption. I specifically look at an R&B with the rowing. So they have partnered up, and their goal is to win medals. Their goal isn't to go to the Olympics. Their goal is to go to the Olympics and win medals. And it's been a long-term partnership, but you can see they're working together. They're building academies. They're making sure they get the guys together. And they only have to get 4 guys together, not 24 guys together. But it's a massive step in the direction that we need to go. I think we're not going to get the government funding to compete in South Africa, so we need commercial funding.
Yeah. Well, your point is spot on. I mean, we know that hockey, you need sort of 18 players that you're going to be selecting, but you need at least 25 as a greater squad. And the point is perfect with the fact that you've got R&B jumping on board with rowing South Africa, and you've got rowers that are sacrificing. They're going to go live in, I think it's Limpopo somewhere, and they are training together as a unit, and they're staying together for large parts of the year. So their end goal is to win Olympic medals, and it's certainly a little bit more challenging with a national program that is, you have more individuals and it costs a lot more to go on a tour. It's over sort of, over the million rand mark to send a team to Europe for a week or 10 days. And so those are the challenges that we see with SA Hockey, where obviously it's a little bit different if you're a rower and you've got sort of 4 or 5 guys that are going to a competition. But it essentially comes down to each individual understanding what their end goal is and seeing that, it's not necessarily about, what I like to do during the day. And if I like to sort of sit on the beachfront and that's my life. And, I can't consider or fathom going and living up in Johannesburg. Then, you find the right individuals that really want to be able to sacrifice anything in order to be able to at least compete and potentially win a medal at an Olympic Games or at a World Cup. And we can see it with, like you mentioned before, with the Irish. It didn't require a lot for them to actually to win a silver medal. It still required them to train together and for players to be living in Europe. But we're not talking about like a 10-year plan now. It changed over sort of 2 years. I believe that we've got an incredible pool of hockey players in South Africa with, individual skill and to be able to, and individual performances to be able to compete with, and to play in top teams in Europe. And we've seen it with a lot of players over the years. Both men and women, and it's now trying to just bring that all together and getting them to train consistently. I don't know a team that don't train together and have still competed and done very well at international level. I'd love to find out. I mean, I'd love to do some research and see, but I doubt that it might have happened once, but it doesn't happen because you need that time together, and that's the most important thing.
Lloyd, I've got to play devil's advocate, and I know that the question was posed to you, though, and you had a quick rebuttal. You speak about sacrifices in order to compete at the Olympics and potentially or hopefully medal at least. But, I mean, there are many, many sacrifices needed, including opportunity costs. So, I mean, you talk about that age range where they're going to give up 4 years of their lives. I mean, you're missing out on study opportunities, obviously work commitments, etc. And the other thing is that a lot of people do have jobs as we speak. Well, most do, because they have to, especially being in South Africa. And to up and leave and to move provinces, to move cities is a tremendous sacrifice. And you could potentially end a career elsewhere. How would one counter that?
Yeah, so that is one of the reasons why I mentioned the sort of 21 to 22 starting point is because a lot of universities in the regions will be offering scholarships to players as they come out of school. So you're looking at players that have finished a 3-year degree, they're now 21 years old, or they're 22 years old. It's very
or 16 if you're a Thai.
Sorry?
16, if you were Tyron. That's when he got his degree.
Well, he's a one in a million. It happens. It's quite seldom that you've got players that are coming in at international team at the age of 18 and 19. Mm. It happens sort of, in each team you might have it once, twice. I know obviously like a guy like Mustafa Kassim, incredible talent. And he's only 18 years old at the moment. He's a one in a generation type of hockey player. But if you're talking about affording someone an opportunity to work, I think there's no better place for most industry to work in Johannesburg. And I believe that we've got a hockey community, an old boys hockey community there as well that would be willing to assist with, with finding players jobs. I believe that my solution is not 100%. It's not foolproof, and this is the way that we need to do it. It certainly requires some sacrifice from players if you want to be able to if you want to be able to study and you have something that is pretty specific and you need to go to a certain university, then there needs to be some sort of understanding if you're a top quality international hockey player that you 100% would have been selected for the national side anyway. Then we've got a solution or an issue for one player, and it's maybe one or two players, but I don't see it being an issue for sort of 15 or 20 or 25 players that need to come live in Johannesburg. Yeah, I believe that we've got enough people sitting up in high enough places in the hockey community, in the corporate world that can find people jobs, help with internships, so that at least we're finding some balance with these players as well. So it's not foolproof, like I say.
It's not foolproof, but it's a start. And what I like is you're not just pointing out the problems, Chuck. You are throwing possible solutions. And, for somebody sitting over in Germany, you really don't have an obligation to be doing it, but you are. It shows you're engaged in the local community. And you that's what you want. You want the good of the game to grow, which is shining through. For the listeners out there, you can also read Chuck's thoughts in the next Hockey the Magazine coming out on the 1st of October, discussing around the high-performance setup for South Africa and what we can do. So I'm looking forward to I've read it already, but I'm looking forward to everybody else getting a chance to read it. But Chuck, before we wrap up, I mean, it wouldn't be a Hockey the Podcast episode if we didn't give you a one-question quiz. Now, of course, the first one that we get.
Sorry, Ty, we had to have some dramatic effect for a change. Sorry, copyright people.
It's okay, they're not listening yet. As long as we don't post it on YouTube, it's a bit better.
Yeah.
So last time you were here, you remember Derek asked you a question about Chuck Norris himself. I don't do the name questions. That's a Derek thing. I do a much more of your career questions. And so your question for today, if you're ready for the challenge, is...
Ready as can be.
You went to the 2006 Hockey World Cup with South Africa. Yes. I want to know who won the bronze medal at that tournament.
Spain.
You answered that very quickly. That means my question was too easy. It wasn't too easy.
I just remember in the party afterwards, Santi Fraser was busy chewing John Wright's ear off, and he had a bronze medal around his neck. And it was, I just remember the look on John Wright's face when I was walking towards him. He was just like, oh, I have to deal with this guy again, because he got so much flack over the years from Santi and from the other two forwards from Spain that, it was just quite a funny moment and something I will never forget as well.
Well, Santi Fraser actually scored in that third place game. Out of interest, do you remember who they beat in the third place game?
Was it Korea?
It was Korea.
Wow.
It was Korea. So, you're too good at this today. This is what happens when you've joined one of our lockdown sports quizzes. So
yeah, that...
Chuck was a Team Pink member.
But you know what else, Ty? The great thing is that it leads to a nice story. So he knew the answer, but not because I was sitting in the stands watching. It was because you were at a party, and one of our regular guests, John Wright, was getting spoken his ear off by a pissed player with a bronze medal around his neck. So it really is pretty cool.
it was good memories. It was my first tour, and it's something that I'll never forget. And I was surrounded by some incredible hockey players that's helped me in my international career. And guys that I looked up to before I even got to that point. So there were a lot of memories over that time with Revs as my coach as well that, I would never forget. So you've got to try harder there, Kajabi.
Wow. Brilliant stuff. Well done. You got that one right. Chuck, obviously it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. I love that you're coming up with ideas, and I'm looking forward to more engagement on this on social media as we look at more ways to take SA hockey to the next level.
Yeah, just to add my sort of last 2 cents, I think that sort of what I was trying to create here was the fact that we try and find solutions with the issue of trying to get our national teams competing at the top level, but usually the solutions require a lot of funding. In this case, I've thought long and hard about it over the last couple of years, where we just need to find solutions that require zero funding or close to zero funding, and use what we have at our disposal. And I think that's, over the years, I've taken a lot of these ideas from various countries or various leagues, and I tried to implement it into the solution that, eventually what I hope is that someone at Saha can actually see it and go, okay, well, at least we don't require any funding. All that we require is some work between ourselves and Southerns and Northerns and Benoni even and Potch. And, creating a sort of unified Gauteng league, because like I've said in my post on Facebook or on my tweets, the Joburg League used to have Pretoria-based teams involved as well. And, they eventually stopped that. And I believe that, it was to the detriment of also of hockey in South Africa. If you've got players that are coming from all over the country to Tuckies and now they can only play in the Pretoria League, they're not really challenging themselves. And we can see over the years, Northern's teams are still very competitive at international at IPTs. So it's better that we collaborate as leagues, as associations, and we try to find a solution at top level. And then from there, we can start developing an elite feeder system program in each of the provinces now that we can sort of a talent identify players and then send them to Johannesburg. And like you say, you can read the article on Hockey the Magazine. But essentially the leagues in each of the provinces will get those players back for when it comes to IPT. So it's not like you're giving up a player or some of the best players in your province. You know that those players have to come back in order to play IPT. So it's just an idea. Hopefully the South African hockey community can sort of garner this, some sort of, support for this and start brainstorming and finding solutions for some of the holes that need to be plugged as well. And then hopefully we can implement something like this so that, we can get our national players training and playing together on a more consistent basis.
Lloyd, it's been illuminating and thoroughly, thoroughly interesting chatting to you again. And keep on finding the good fights. I want to say continue to be outspoken on social media, but it's not even really being outspoken. You're just being a voice and creating solutions as opposed to, I think you did mention it, as opposed to someone sitting in a bar at 3 o'clock in the afternoon talking about, geez, what could have happened back in the day in terms of finding ways to make better of the current situations that we find ourselves in. But and it's great to see that the responses that you received following your very, very analytical and detailed solutions posted across social media. So thank you. It's been great to see.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully we can just keep talking about it and brainstorming ideas, and we can implement something like this to better hockey in South Africa. I think that's the most important thing, is that we've forgotten about sort of how we can get there, and we just want to get there. So there needs to be a solution to the current problem that we have, and to say that there is no problem, then we certainly blinded as to what's happening in hockey in South Africa.
Well, you've always got a platform on this show if you need to talk more. Lloyd Norris-Jones, it's been a pleasure as always. Enjoy Germany. And if we don't chat to you before then, best of luck with the birth of your first child.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm super excited. I know that there's going to be a lot of caffeine filled and sleepless nights. I'm certainly looking forward to this next phase of my life.
Oh, it's obviously it's life changing, but you you'll say it now, and once it happens, nothing better will take place in your life than having a child. I can absolutely guarantee that. Cheers, Lloyd. Thanks so much as always.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you guys for all that you do for SA Hockey. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Derek, what's really great, and I enjoyed in that conversation, is just the fact that it's not just pointing out the problems. It's pointing out potential solutions, and not just solutions that are, okay, let's get money and then we can fix this.
It's not moaning. It's exactly that. It's coming up with ideas to try and make things better. And let's face it, people will say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And many people argue that it is broke. But even those that don't, that will say, no, it's fine. Nothing is beyond being improved. Nothing is perfect. And there's the ideas that he came up with and was great on the show. And I mean, you can follow him on social media, and he gives a long, detailed discussion, pretty much what he said, yeah. But the responses, I was really impressed to see, because it opened a lot of people's eyes, and that was the most revealing for me.
No, 100%. And, you know, what I just love is, he's sitting in Europe. He could easily just turn a blind eye on South African hockey now and just finish out his playing days in Germany, and he's had a good career, but he doesn't want to do that. He wants to be part of the solution, and he knows that we can be, as South Africans, we can be challenging the best in the world, because at a schoolboy level, we are up there with the best in the world.
Yeah, no, completely. And I like the fact that he speaks about the fact that Ka Ching, with the prevalence of the schools here in the area, and I mean, of course, there are brilliant schools all over the country, but there's no question that in the small space that we have, I mean, it's just wall-to-wall schools and good schools. I just like the fact that he's covered all the bases. He says, you know, you need accommodation, you need a place which is close to training grounds. You need a place which, obviously, the home of SA Hockey is based here in Johannesburg. So, I mean, he said it's not foolproof, and there's a lot. It's a work in progress, but from what we've heard so far, it certainly does offer some potential greatness when it comes to the sport in SA.
Yeah, 100%. And all it needs is some administrator to say, let's give it a try. Because I look at it and I think, what are you losing? What are you losing from giving it a try? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you're not...
Yeah, so let's hold thumbs. And, I mean, it's one voice, but it's a very powerful voice. It's a strong voice, and it's one that people certainly listen to. And never mind the voice. He's got the talent to match. So he certainly knows what he's speaking about. So if Lloyd Norris-Jones has something to say about hockey... it's best that people do sit up and take a listen. And speaking of listening, thanks very much for listening to us once again. Episode 54 of Hockey the Podcast. It's been great as always, Ty.
Yeah, you've definitely been blessed. You've been listening to the supermodel, Lloyd Norris-Jones, the sometimes model, Derek Albert, and the accounting model time.
Cheers, Ty. Have a great one. Catch you next Tuesday.